The following program is made possible by the friends and partners of GodQuest Ministries.
Is evolution probable or is it problematic? That's what we're talking about on the Creation Today show from the CTN studio in Pensacola, Florida. I'm one of your hosts, Eric Hovind, and I'm joined, of course, by Paul Taylor.
And on today's show, we've got the creation speaker, Jay Seagutt, in the studio. And we'll be talking to him about his creation talks and in particular about a new talk that he's done on the subject of DNA.
Remember, we believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate in every single detail. You can always ask us questions by emailing us at questions@creationtoday.org. You can also get us on Twitter, right?
Twitter would be at Creation Today, and Facebook is facebook.com/Creation Today.
We are really excited here in season two to have Jay Seagutt joining us for the Creation Today show. But before we introduce him, we've got a couple announcements, don't we, Paul?
We have indeed. Don't forget that the Proof of God conference is coming up in October 2012.
That's correct. 12th and the 13th, Friday and Saturday, 2 days that will radically change your life, I guarantee you. Meet us down there in Orlando. You're going to be there?
I shall be there.
I'm going to be there.
And you're going to be there. And also, don't forget that Cy Ten Brueggen, Kate, will be there. His website is proofthatgodexists.com.
.org. Proofthatgodexists.org. Yep. Mark Spence from Way of the Master is going to be there. He's the, he's the something of the School of Biblical Evangelism, the Dean of Students.
Dean of Students.
Of the School of Biblical Evangelism. Yeah. And then your good friend and my good friend.
Carl Kirby from the Reasons for Hope Ministries is also going to be there as well.
And we are really, really excited about that. Hey, also, over the next couple of months, we got a lot of speaking engagements around America. And so check out creationtoday.org, go into the live events, and find out if Paul and I are going to be in your area. We'd love to get a chance to actually meet you and have some fellowship with you.
And don't forget, if you want to take the risk of inviting one of us to come and speak at your church, we don't make too much mess, but you can get in touch with us through the website.
Pastors are used to cleaning up messes anyway. It's no big deal. They can handle that. Well, we are excited about the guests that we have today. Today, joining us on the show from Wisconsin, he runs the Center for The Creation Education Center.
It's easy for you to say.
That's right. Jay Seagutt. Jay, welcome to the show.
Well, it's an honor to be here with you guys today.
Well, thank you so much, man. We've been having some fun. He got in yesterday and really enjoyed already the fellowship that we've got to have together. So we really appreciate that. Tell us how long you've been speaking on creation and why you think it's so important.
Sure. Well, I've been speaking for about 26 years. My background in a nutshell is that I was raised in a Christian home. Believed the Bible from cover to cover, accepted Christ as my Savior when I was in early grade school years, and went to public schools all the way through high school. And then when I graduated, I went to a Christian college to study mechanical engineering, and partway through I became more interested in physics, but that college didn't have a physics degree, so I ended up transferring there, went back to Wisconsin to a state university to pursue a degree in physics, and that's when my world changed quite a bit, going from a small Christian college where my engineering professors opened up in prayer to a very large state university where my physics professors did not open up in prayer, and they were all evolutionists, some were atheists, and they were telling me in essence that everything I believe was wrong. And that made me very uncomfortable to be surrounded by these PhD scientists who I assumed had a lot of evidence for what they believed, but I realized probably for the first time in my life that although I knew what I believed, I really didn't know why.
So you really got dropped in the frying pan. It was just kind of a sudden, whoa, this is... I'm really under attack here.
True, big time. So God put it on my heart to start looking into these things. How do I know that God exists? How do I know the Bible is the inspired word of God? How do I know the creation account is scientifically valid? How do I know that there was a flood? How do I know Jesus was the Son of God? So I started doing all my research about 26 years ago, started doing some speaking, and now I've been speaking for 26 years, and about 5 years ago, I founded the Creation Education Center, so I've been in full-time ministry the past 5 years.
Wow. Well, praise God. And I know you stay extremely busy traveling and speaking all over. By the way, you can go to his website, which is CECWIS.
WISC.com.
WISC for Wisconsin, just because that's where he's located and the CEC was already taken. Can you believe that? Anyway, go to CECWISC.com and schedule you to come and speak. Does a phenomenal job. We've actually got a couple of your DVDs that you can get off your website. You know, we really like to talk about how some people are good at speaking on creation. Other ones know the material, but they're not really good at communicating it. I'm telling you, I love the way Jay communicates this. It's a blessing. His book, Let There Be Light, is an excellent overview of the creation versus evolution topic, and that's what we're here to talk about. So I'm really, really excited about some of the stuff that you've got going on. Can we just jump right into some of the stuff we were talking about before the show?
Because I think we should, yeah.
I really want them to get some of this. Yeah. All right, first of all, evolution. Paul, we talk about evolution a lot and the problems with it.
Yeah, and of course, one of the things that that you were talking about in the chat we were having is the fact that there's a difficulty in the way that people use the term evolution. And so you think it's very important to make sure that there's a definition of evolution. What is your definition of evolution, or the various definitions that people use?
Sure, it's very important to talk about defining, because sometimes you get into a conversation with someone and you can be talking about something completely different and it causes a lot of problems. So if we take a look at what I'm not referring to by evolution, it's not simply change. A lot of people think, well, change is evolution. So if we as Christians say, well, we don't believe in evolution, you're thinking we're crazy. We don't believe in change. Well, we see change all the time. So evolution certainly involves change, but it's not just any kind of change. It's a very specific type of change. It's really not the type of change that we see. And we see change all the time. I mean, we see different dogs and cats and horses, and we do see different beaks on finches that Darwin got very excited about.
Right.
These are actually facts of science. I mean, we see them all the time. Creationists don't deny change. So this is not what we're talking about. What we are talking about are these kind of changes, that supposedly there was a single-celled organism that existed maybe 3.8 billion years ago that slowly evolved in every other life form on this planet over millions and millions and millions of years, all by accident. That's the kind of change that we're talking about. That's really what I mean when I'm talking about evolution. Sometimes we call it molecules to man evolution.
Yeah.
The idea of chemicals forming a single-celled organism, which then evolved over millions of years into a human being. So that's what we really mean when we're talking about evolution.
And is that where a lot of the confusion is, just over what evolution means?
Sure, because again, we see change all the time, and since many people equate evolution with change, they think, well, it's proof of evolution. You see different even species. Occasionally, we can even see a new species and say, well, that's a demonstration of evolution right there. But again, creationists aren't against change. They're not even against the idea of occasionally a new species coming up, but we don't see those new species or varieties due to a gain of genetic information. It's just a shuffling of existing information, or most of the time actually destroying a lot of that information.
Do you think that there's sometimes a deliberate disingenuousness about the way that that evolutionists will phrase this when they say, here's one change happening here, so therefore that proves that change happens across different species and so on?
Sure. I think sometimes that can happen. I think the majority of evolutionists are pretty sincere. They've really only been presented one side of the story, so they grow up believing in that, and some of them become teachers and professors, so they just continue on the same story, and they're not necessarily trying to lie to anyone. It kind of makes sense to them, but they really haven't heard the other side and don't know a lot of the details behind it.
So if somebody said, the only reason you're a creationist right now is because that's the way you were raised, would you say no? I mean, I've looked at both sides. Respond to that real quick before we take a break.
Sure. I think when I was young, that would be the case. I grew up believing in Christ, believing in the Bible, and believing in creation, because that's what I've been taught. It was the only thing that I was taught. But as I got older, I had to look into these things myself, and it just kind of confirmed that what I believed was correct. So I did go through some of the struggles and looking at some of the evidences and arguments for and against it, and I am a stronger Christian now for it.
So you're not a creationist and a Christian just out of ignorance?
No, I think it's not in spite of the facts, but it goes along with the facts.
Wow, that is awesome. Well, I am excited. You got a new DVD coming out called Evolution Probable or Problematic that's going to go into, you know, let's really talk about this. Is it a problem, or is it actually possible? Could it happen? And I want to get into some of that information in these next two segments that we have, because you are going to be fascinated by some of this information. It really goes into the complexities, the information that is found in genes, and you're really going to like it. So hang on just a second. We'll be back to talk about evolution, probable or problematic.
Join Eric Hoban and Paul Tater from creationtoday.org, along with Carl Kirby of Reason for Hope Ministries, Mark Spence of The Way of the Master, and Cy-10 Brueggenkate of ProofThatGodExists.org for the Proof of God Conference in Orlando, Florida. For more information, visit ProofConference.com. That's ProofConference.com. Or call toll-free 1-877-479-3466.
If you enjoy the Creation Today show, please thank Category 5 TV by supporting the network for making this available on their channel. By investing with the Category 5 TV network, you support Christian programming that's available 24/7. Visit category5.tv to see how you can pitch in a little or a lot and help keep the network going strong. Thanks so much for watching.
Welcome back. You're watching the Creation Today show with me, Paul Taylor, and with Eric Hovind. And we're having a great time today. We're talking with Jay Seagert, who's joined us in the studio. Welcome back, Jay. It's good to have you with us.
Great to be here again.
And we were talking just before the break about the definition of evolution. And, you know, quite often I get emails, as probably you do as well, sort of accusatory emails. It's very short, usually. Why do you people just believe this nonsense about creation when there's so much evidence for evolution all over the place? And, you know, these things, you get these brief emails and you think, what on earth do they expect to achieve from that? But why is it that evolution has so convinced these people? What is it that they're seeing?
Sure. Again, usually they've only seen one side, and what we call elephant hurling goes on, where these huge statements are thrown out there that there's tons of evidence from every area of science that proves evolution, and they've typically only been shown evolution, the idea, from a certain angle, and from a certain vantage point, it can seem kind of plausible.
Right.
And one example would be if we take a look at a transition supposedly from a lungfish into a newt. These creatures look kind of similar to begin with. And you could envision, doesn't take too much imagination to envision the fins getting a little bit stronger, and maybe it could learn how to crawl, and then it peeks its head out of the water and can somehow learn how to breathe air, and eventually crawls up onto land and it turns into something more like a newt or a reptile. So we can kind of picture that happening, especially when they tell us, oh, there are millions and billions of years that have gone on. So it might seem plausible on the surface, but when you peek under the hood, that's where you start to see problems, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But there's a lot of storytelling that goes on with evolution. For example, we have four pictures of transportation here, and we could rearrange these things so that they're in order from simple to complex. And we could talk about the evolution of the motorcycle, how it goes from the two small wheels in the back of a tricycle on up to two major wheels and into an electric motor of a scooter, and then doing a gas engine of a motorcycle. And we see that seems kind of ridiculous because we know of the complexity that has to go on in there.
And of course, that's been achieved by simple random mutations.
Right, there's no purpose going on.
No
there.
Intelligence, no purpose.
No design allowed there.
Natural selection alone has created the... Yeah. The motorcycle from
sure.
the tricycle.
We see those stories, but it gets into the textbooks too. And one of the classic ones is the evolution of the horse from Eohippus all the way up to the modern horse. And that's been admitted by many evolutionists. Okay, that didn't really happen, and maybe we should get it out of the textbook since it's not real science.
But it's still there, for crying out loud. Come on, guys, help us out. We need to get the errors out of the textbook. Sorry, go ahead.
Sure. Well, we could look too of how evolution supposedly works. We've got stories like this, where you've got evolution in action. And this is typically how it would be presented in a classroom setting. You've got an organism that's going to reproduce itself, and so it copies its DNA, passes it on to its children, and the children come out looking pretty much like parents, and then the children have children. Those are the grandchildren. They look pretty much the same as their parents and the grandparents. And then the grandchildren have children. They copy the DNA, but oops, once in a while, we've got mutations going on. These are these accidental random changes in the genes, and they tell us that some of these changes are bad, and they said, admit, yeah, most of them are bad, but once in a while there are some good ones too. And then you've got natural selection coming along that said to get rid of the bad ones and keep the good ones. And then the replication continues on, where you've got the new good ones reproducing themselves and the original ones. So you can imagine this going on for millions and millions of years. Eventually, you'd have a great, great variety. But there are a lot of problems when we take a look at this, when you look at the details and take a look further at some of the mutations, what they supposedly are.
The simple definition, many people hear the simple definition and they go, oh, okay, that sounds possible.
Sure. Not only sounds possible, but even probable. And you've got the non-Christian students in the classroom saying, wow, this makes a lot of sense to me. I can see how that could be true.
Because you've given enough time.
Enough time. Time is a magic element here. And then you've got the Christian students sitting in the same classes saying to themselves, you know what, this makes sense to me too. Maybe God used evolution. Maybe that's what happened because it seems so plausible at that point.
So what are the problems with it? Where do we get into the, you tell us, what do you see as, okay, here's the problems.
Sure. Well, the problem has to do with these mutations that are going on. We'll eventually get into some of that, but let's take a closer look at these mutations. And in order to do that, we'll probably first take a look at what's going on with DNA itself, which is really interesting. If you had even a teaspoon amount of your own DNA and wanted to back up that much data, let's say onto CDs, CDs can store a lot of information.
Right.
So you got just a teaspoon amount of your own DNA, and you want to back that up. We back up our computers all the time in case they crash. So if we wanted to back up that much information onto CDs, how many CDs would we need? Well, sometimes I say we would need 100 CDs just for a teaspoon amount of our own DNA.
That's a lot of information in there.
And it would be nice if that was right, but it isn't. That's actually a lie. We'd actually need 1,000 CDs to back up just a teaspoon, and even that's a lie. We'd actually need 1 million CDs to back up the amount of information in just a teaspoon amount of our own DNA.
Dude!
That's amazing.
And one last time, that was the last time I'm going to lie.
Yeah, I don't believe you.
we would actually need 1 million CDs given to us every minute for 9.5 years. Then you'd have enough CDs to back up the amount of information in just a teaspoon amount of our own DNA. It's phenomenal.
Wow.
Whoa. We are complex. My goodness. Okay, how many CDs is that? I don't want to do the math.
5 trillion.
Five trillion. 5 trillion CDs worth of data.
Helps you appreciate the national debt, too, then.
Yeah. In 1 teaspoon of DNA.
Yes, a lot of information. But again, they're teaching us that it's just all by an accident. So accidental processes over millions of years produced all that information.
So do mutations produce the evolution? Is that what we see happening?
Well, that's what they tell us. We don't actually see that happening. You know, when we talk about mutations, even evolutionists again admit that the vast majority of mutations are deleterious or bad, but they say once in a while you've got some good ones. And there's a lot of problems with that concept. Even we've shown today that most of the mutations are actually have such a small detrimental effect that natural selection doesn't even really see them.
Wow.
So they don't get weeded out. They stay in there. In fact, one evolutionist said it's amazing that we're not dead 100 times over because of the apparent accumulation of all these small mutations over millions and millions of years. It's kind of like rust appearing on your car. An individual rust spot isn't going to do anything. But if it keeps rusting, they'll add up and eventually the car will fall apart. And that's what's happening with mutations. Most of them are pretty small, too small for natural selection to catch. So they accumulate. And if evolution were true, we probably shouldn't even be alive today.
Wow. So the whole idea of mutations producing something new in natural selection, causing it to evolve, the exact opposite of what they're saying is true.
Sure, mutations are typically taking us downhill, and any time we see a supposed benefit, sometimes it might be a benefit to that organism, but it's at the result typically of loss of information when bacteria become resistant to antibiotics.
That's because of a loss of information, not a gain. It's not like they gained something to defend those antibiotics. They actually lost information.
Sure, there's a number of ways that it can happen. One is it can actually transfer. One organism can be resistant already, and it can transfer that to another organism. Again, there's no new information there. It's just a transfer. Another one can be through a loss of information. A bacteria can lose an enzyme that would help break down the antibiotic into a poison. If it loses that, it can't convert it into a poison,
wow.
So it lives. But it lost information in order to do
in
that.
In order to accomplish what
sure.
it... Sure. Wow. Wow. So what do you think? You think evolution has some problems yet?
I think it has quite a lot of problems. And it's interesting, of course, that we've touched on the whole subject of information. We've talked about information quite a bit, but I think you're going to be blown away by what you're going to hear as we talk to Jay a lot more about how that information works in practice in our DNA. Coming up now.
Welcome back to the Creation Today Show, where we're talking about evolution. Is it probable or problematic? Our special guest is Jay Siegert from the Creation Education Center in Wisconsin. And Jay, so glad you're here. I want to get into some more of this information about DNA. I don't know about you, Paul, but I love this stuff.
I think this is fascinating.
We ought to have a job that does nothing but talk about creation versus evolution.
Absolutely.
Oh, we do. All right. Jay, let's get into some of the information in DNA, because you're saying evolution is problematic. It may look like it makes sense to some people when you look at, hey, mutations, yeah, give it a long period of time, it could look like it produces evolution. You're saying, hang on, no, it's actually problematic when we get to it. Explain why. Let's get into that.
Sure. What we're doing is peeking under the hood to see some of the details where, again, on the surface, it might seem probable, plausible, but we're seeing a lot of problems, in fact, virtually insurmountable problems when we look under the hood. And just one example, if we were to take a look at DNA, let's say we're looking at a certain segment of DNA and we were reading that segment and we would read a little stretch of it and it said, was it a rat I saw? Kind of a strange statement, but let's clean it up here a little bit and look at it. We in English read from left to right. So was it a rat I saw? What's interesting about this little sentence is you can read it backwards from right to left. Was it a rat I saw? So just kind of a fun little statement, can be read forwards and backwards, same information, a palindrome. We talked
about
that before.
Yes. Palindrome is a technical word, folks.
Yes.
Was it a car or a cat?
Was it a car or cat?
I saw.
It was a rat that I saw. So kind of fun, can be read forwards and backwards. Well, that's what we're seeing in the DNA. It's called reverse transcription, except it's more complex in our DNA. This is the same information forwards and backwards. Let's take a look at this word here, desserts. We read that from left to right again. If we were to reverse this and go from right to left, it spells the word stressed. So this one can be read forwards and backwards, but when we read it backwards, it's a separate piece of information.
It's a different meaning.
So now let's take a look at some mutations.
Well, just a moment, because when you read something forwards and when you're reading it backwards, what you're saying is that that is the way that DNA is read inside us, that the reading mechanism inside us might see different messages in different directions across the same section of molecule.
Right, same section of molecule. You can read it one way, it's one set of instructions. We read it reverse,
yes,
the other way, and it's a separate set of instructions.
The same set of base pairs,
yeah,
is producing a different message in opposite directions, which is fascinating.
So 5 trillion CDs worth of information out of one tablespoon, and you could take that and it has stuff backwards and forwards. And
sure, much of the DNA they're discovering can be read forwards and backwards. We don't know how much yet, but probably at least half of the DNA can be read forwards and backwards.
Well, I'm glad we've got to the final complexity of it anyway.
Yeah, sure.
That's it.
We're starting to scratch the surface of it.
Really?
How complicated does this get? So sometimes it can mean the same thing, forward and backwards. Sometimes it can mean something different.
It's actually different information each time.
It is different information.
It's different. So when we're looking at that information and considering making changes, because again, if you just reproduce that DNA faithfully over and over and over, you're never going to get something different. We've got to make changes. Well, that's where those mutations come in. So if we make a random change to our original message here, let's say we delete a T here, we're not only destroying the information in the initial message, desserts, but you're destroying the reverse transcribed message here, the word stressed. It doesn't spell stressed anymore either. So you're destroying both pieces of information. And even if, once in a great while, a random change to the original message might make a slight improvement, you're still destroying the secondary message that we read when it goes backwards. And what's interesting is when we look at the DNA, we're not talking about a single word or a short phrase that can be read forwards and backwards. We're talking about entire chapters of information that can be read forwards and backwards.
Wow.
So you're talking about what did you call that thing, a palindrome?
Palindrome, yeah.
You're talking about making a palindrome that is a couple chapters long.
A chapter, at least a single chapter. And here's a simple analogy. Let's say that you guys worked in a factory and you were making smartphones. And your boss came to you one day and said, I got a project for you. I need you to write the segment in this chapter that decodes for how this smartphone is going to download apps from the web. And you say, okay, no problem. That's what I do. So your boss is walking away, and all of a sudden he turns around and comes back. He says, oh, wait a minute. Forgot to tell you one thing. When you write your chapter on downloading apps from the web, you have to write it in such a way that when you read it backwards, it tells the phone how to play MP3 files or videos. And you'd be looking at your boss thinking, you're joking, right? I mean, that can't be done. And he said, no, I'm serious. This is what you have to do. Well, that's humanly impossible to do. You can't even program a computer to get that out. But that's what we're seeing in the DNA. There's entire chapters that can be read forwards and backwards. One way codes for these proteins, and another way codes for totally separate proteins, all programmed in there.
Into that same DNA.
Yes.
It's just incredible, isn't it? And, you know, sometimes people say, well, the DNA is equivalent to a computer program, but it's actually far more sophisticated than that.
Blows away anything that we have, but it actually gets worse than that.
There are
many levels of problems here. We've got another issue going on here called overlapping instructions. If we take a look at a sentence like this, which is kind of a weird one, it says, I like choco later that evening. The reason it's weird is that there are two sentences here that overlap. We've got, I like chocolate, which is true, and then we've got later that evening.
Yeah.
And they overlap here in the middle. It's overlapping instructions. So now again, if we take this segment of DNA and we make a random change to it, let's say we change the E to an H, that's a substitution mutation, we're destroying actually both pieces of information here. And what's interesting is it gets more challenging for evolution because there are entire chapters in our DNA that overlap, not little segments of a couple letters, but entire chapters that overlap. So imagine trying to write a book where you're writing separate chapters, but their chapters actually overlap and they make sense in both parts of the book.
Right.
Absolutely amazing.
And you're saying making one little small change, they say, oh, these little changes over a long period of time help it. You're going, you make a little bitty change and you're not just changing one little piece of information. You're changing something that is used over here, this way, that way. It's really wreaking havoc by making one little bitty change.
Sure, it's a domino effect. When you make one change here, it's not isolated. So we're saying, fine, even if a random change could theoretically make an improvement in one area, which theoretically it's possible, even if you do have one small positive good change there, because of the domino effect, you're messing up so many other things.
Yes.
You make, in fact, more messes than you're making anything that's going to be good or useful.
Now, this effect that you're looking at here is not rare, is it, Jay? You know, this sort of thing where you've got some letters there, and you're saying that's, of course, could be a whole chapter's worth where it's overlapping. That's not rare. This is happening all the time in the DNA.
Sure, they're discovering more and more. I mean, we don't know if we're even just starting to scratch the surface or what, because there's so much more to learn.
So that's what's going on in us right now.
I mean, this is fascinating, isn't it? And I think it's going to be fair to say as well that you're going to tell us that that's not even the end of it yet, is it? And we're going to have to hold that thought because we're running out of time at that point. But we're going to film the next week's episode now soon, and we're going to talk about more of that. So you're going to need to stay tuned to be able to find out a great deal more about this fascinating subject.
It really is. We get to hear about it now. You have to wait till next week. That is going to be our show for this week. This is the Creation Today Show, where we believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. If you got questions, they can send them in.
Yes, don't forget Twitter at Creation Today to ask your questions. Email questions@creationtoday.org.
That's right. And come visit us, creationtoday.org. God bless. Thank you so much for joining us.
Do you need the tools to defend your faith? Visit our websites for up-to-date content. Attend one of our live events and shop online at creationstore.org. We are Creation Today.